Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
I'm a man who believed that I died 20 years ago, and I live like a man who is dead already. I have no fear whatsoever of anybody or anything.
Gary Webb. I am an investigative journalist, and in 1996, I wrote a series of stories entitled Dark Alliance, which was about CIA involvement in drug trafficking.
Are you a man who once said death smiles at us all? All a man can do is smile back.
We've both been skull and bone, the secret society.
So sick that we can't talk about it.
What does that mean for America? The conspiracy theorists are going to go on.
I'm sure they are. I don't know. I haven't seen the rest.
Number 322.
I sad duty to report this afternoon that my friend and colleague, Tim Russert, collapsed and died early this afternoon.
I may die in this cell tonight or in the arena tomorrow. I am a slave. What possible difference can I make?
And no official of my administration, whether his rank is high or low, civilian or military, should interpret my words here tonight as an excuse to censor the news, to stifle dissent, to cover up our mistakes, or to withhold from the press and the public the facts they deserve to know.
What the fuck is up, guys? Welcome to Already Dead. Got Austin next to me, and then I got our guest today, Adam. I think he might be producing for us here soon. You put that call out, and then I actually had a professional hit me up. So here we are. I've been meaning to get a talk to Adam at some point. You've been kind of, you know, on the Rolodex of people that I need to get around to talking to at some point. I think you did a really dope episode not too long ago with Richard on the OKC bombing. Mm-hmm. That's when you kind of really flexed me. I was like, oh shit, he knows his shit. Like I'd say you're like probably like in, you know, give or take, but maybe better, maybe worse in the knowledge level of me on OKC. You know, not to say I'm like an expert or anything. Some people tell me that. I don't like accepting that at all.
I think you've hung out with Richard Booth like 8 times more than I have. So I think you probably know more than I do. So
maybe I'm kind of retarded, so it doesn't all stick in there too well. So, but it's repetitive. So a lot of it's stuck in. So I think we'll talk about that a little bit today. So, it's a pleasure having you with us, Adam. It's pretty good to see you. I've always heard you. I was like, you know, I didn't know what to expect. Your voice, I don't know, just doesn't seem to match the body, but I'm pleasantly surprised. Like, yeah, this dude fucks.
Yeah. Thanks for having me, guys. Yeah. I love both your guys' individual shows, and I was excited to see you guys team up for this thing. So it's awesome because there's so many parapolitical podcasts that I've been forced to listen to over the years that are run by just disgusting leftist commies, and it seemed like they were the only ones doing any parapolitical research back in the day. So it's good to see. It's good to see guys like us that are picking it up and looking into stuff with our point of view.
Guys that have maybe lifted a weight once or twice, maybe played some school sports of some sort that wasn't like, I don't know, track or tennis. But it's a pleasure having you here. It is pretty dope. But Austin, this week, I think you got into your Watergate episode. So that was an hour and a half long, dude. That was a long one for you. So
my God, brother.
I think a good way to put it is at the end, you guys talk about Pedogate, and that was referring to something else. But I was kind of like, dude, you know what?
That's Namrock, what Namrock Watergate hit me Pedogate. Up. Right. Namrock hits me up. He DMs me last night, and he DMs me with this video of Al Pacino from the movie. And he's like, he labeled it with like, Austin, every time he tries to do an episode that doesn't revolve around elite pedophiles. And it's Al Pacino going, just when I thought I was out, they pulled me back in. You know what I mean? That's it. I almost died. Maybe they stopped fucking kids. Exactly, in my experience. 100%. I'm like, okay, I need to take a break from the Beast of Belgium and Mark Dutroux and, like, you know, get into some more parapolitical areas where I don't have to necessarily entirely focus on that. And then I found myself, I thought at first maybe it would just, like, maybe it would stop at the, at just the call girl service. And you know what I mean? And it doesn't seem to be the case. But anyway, other than that, I'm down to get into a little bit of that, because I made a few more notes as well that I didn't end up putting in the pod.
That, yeah, I haven't said anything to you, but I was really strongly considering asking you to maybe do another series on that. Because I don't know if that'd be asking too much of you, because that'd be essentially asking 2 days out of the week of you, because we already do this show once a week. And then we'd have to do another day, but it's like,
I
don't know.
It.
I'm like, this is, I don't know. It seems to be, this is series wise. Cause like the way I like to use this show is like learning for me. This is like part of my learning process. And Watergate, I don't know what it is. Like that period of history and that specific thing is just like very much a blank space where I don't have much in my head at all. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, oh, and they're like, holy shit, there's a lot going on here. So I'm like,
oh my God,
I could get into that.
Dude, I'm obsessed with that time period. Honestly, it's kind of consumed me in a lot of the episodes that I've done. But once again, I mean, this is perfectly connected directly to Operation 40 and members that carried out the JFK assassination, like Howard Hunt, you know, like, and when you know this and you've like, I covered Howard Hunt during the Lee Harvey Oswald episode and the JFK episode. And I think maybe he even came up during the Barry Seal episode, but there's so much crossover there.
That's D.B. Cooper. People say it's D.B. Cooper, too.
Oh, dude, I would not be surprised. I'm going to have to do another deep dive on a D.B. Cooper. Honestly.
Did E. Howard Hunt have some, I can't, it sounds familiar that he had some deathbed confession. Did he have do that?
Yes, actually, he did. He told his son. And by the way, that there was, I'm trying to remember exactly what he said, but it was just, if I remember right, it was basically that, you know, he was confirming that he was among the JFK assassination team, and that he was not physically, like, he was physically there, but he was just kind of like, if I'm remembering right, he was running like kind of lead while the others were getting into position for the triangulated fire that they were going to perform, which they were going to be, I believe there were three stations of kill teams and from three different areas. And they were all allegedly intended to shoot him at the exact same time. But yeah, so I do remember that his son, that officials within the government tried to pretty much run interference and not allow his son to even get to spend any time with him on his deathbed for that confession to happen, which, you know, of course they would. But yeah, this guy right here is probably accurate.
Was it, you know, Hunt that went on some weird occult rabbit hole with like some other people? Or maybe I'm conflating him with some other glowy. Maybe. Does that ring a bell?
I know that there's definitely some occult connections to all of this, right? But
I mean, there always are, but
yeah, 100%. But I don't have any like direct evidence of Howard Hunt right as of right now.
You know,
but
what? I'm mixing it up. I'm thinking of somebody that was with Crowley. That would have been a different time period. That wouldn't have made sense. Crowley was too far back. So there was some other glowy. I think that might have been back in the OSS days. And then what it was, the CIA was before, or whatever the fuck it was called before that. No. I think it was back in those days.
Alan Dulles.
Maybe it was, actually, I don't think it was Dulles. But whatever, it'll come to me later. But it doesn't matter. It's a side tangent. Right. But yeah, go on, sorry.
No, I just thought that the craziest part to me is beyond Fiona Barnett and the pedophile connection, because I think that's obviously the most extraordinary, but the Heidi Reichen connection to the White House call girl, and she set up a referral program, basically a prostitute referral program with the DNC.
Real quick, Austin, yeah. I think we've gotten in a bad habit of doing this thing on the show. I've had a couple complaints and comments, and I do it too, where we just talk as if our audience has listened to everything that we've done. So, like, I guess just like a quick like elevator pitch. What are we even saying? Like, what? So obviously we're talking about Watergate. I think the audience gets that. But just quick, I know you did an hour and a half episode, so it's like, but just kind of a quick, like, what are we talking about here? So they know, the audience knows.
Okay. All right. So, I mean, I guess so. It was like 2 a.m. in the early morning hours of June 17th, 1972, when five men were arrested at Watergate headquarters of the Democratic National Committee. And they were like in business suits, wearing surgical gloves, allegedly, and had bugging devices and photographic equipment. And it was like, it only took like 24 hours for the police and FBI to establish links between the men who were arrested and the independent committee to reelect the president, which was supposed to be working on behalf of Nixon, which also keep in mind, like, I found out that he was polling at 70% before this happened, and it plummeted below 20%, you know, 25% or something like drastic. Once all of this went public. And I just thought, like, if the prevailing narrative holds any weight whatsoever, well, you know, the idea is that he's ordering this break-in in order to get dirt on his political rivals who could potentially run for president, right? Sorry. Damn. My hip just locked up on me, dude. But anyway, it's extremely interesting because that official narrative just doesn't hold any water for me. As far as why, if you're polling at 70%, would you even need to take that risk? You know, so that was definitely something that kind of caught my eye immediately. But anyway, so beyond that, they were they were like committing perjury. Like, everybody was turning on each other right away. And from the actual account of one of the burglars, this guy blew my damn mind when I put that in the podcast, and his detailed story of how the break-ins went, just, it was so sloppy. And it seemed so much like a setup the very last time that they broke into the Watergate, because they broke in twice to the Watergate facility, once in May and once in June. And the June break-in is when they got caught. But yeah, so it seems like Howard Hunt and McCord had infiltrated the White House, right, to a certain extent. And had claimed to no longer be, like, as if they were retired from the CIA. But in reality, they were still actively working on behalf of the CIA.
There is no retired.
There is no retired. Absolutely not.
Who's the conservative? I don't mean to cut you off, but who's the conservative fuck that everyone's always... God, there's that conservative guy who came out of... God, was it National Review? I think he did.
William F. Buckley.
Yeah, and that's like one of the big conservative heroes. And like his thing is like he was former CIA. And it's like, guys, he's a fucking spook. Like, well, let's be real.
It's just like Woodward and Bernstein allegedly tackling the story and you know, getting to the bottom of the scandal. And in reality, Woodward's just a spook, man. Like, I don't think for a second that he wasn't entirely manufactured as a part of some Mockingbird operation, because I don't trust Woodward and Bernstein for a second once you see everything they're connected with.
And on that note, we always talk about Gunderson too, but it's like, yeah. I know, yes, I just said that about Buckley, but at the same time with Gunderson, it's like, okay, but if you look at some of the shit he said back then, he looks like a fucking prophet now. So, I don't know. Maybe he was legit. Like, I don't know. I know some people might say he was shit coding some of the stuff or whatever.
Right.
But I mean, whatever. If you're shit coating with the truth, I mean, what kind of, that's a weird ass shit coat. I mean,
yeah.
If anything, that's more about the audience being, I don't know, faggots about it, I guess. I don't.
Well, dude, it's so funny that you mentioned a potential series on this, because I still feel like I would love to be way more I would love to be way closer to this right now. I would love to spend much more time with this subject, because I need a better working knowledge of the players. There's so many overlapping threads that it's almost impossible with the amount of time that I've spent with it to get, like, there's just an additional depth, right? That I would like to go to truly understand why potentially John Dean would have ordered this break-in when it's so crazy, because once you find out that, and basically you only have to have the most basic knowledge of Watergate to understand that this break-in happened not to get political dirt on operatives within the DNC. It's crazy, because there are multiple theories. One of the theories are that John Dean was directly connected, who was in the White House as an aide to Nixon, and he's only 30 years old or something. And he was directly connected to this call girl operation that was being ran out of the DNC, and the alleged black book that we know existed, that was Heidi Reichens, who was the madam who was running the call girl service. It turns out that John Dean and his wife were in that book, because they were directly connected to that operation. And so it's very interesting to me that John Dean would order a break-in to get dirt on DNC Democratic, you know, operatives or Democratic officials, when he's already a part of the operation. And actually, one of the burglars who broke in, and this wasn't put in many of the articles, was tackled to the ground by the arresting officer, Carl Schaffler. They had like this huge, dude, they were struggling and wrestling on the ground. And then all they put in the Washington Post and the newspaper was that the like tag of the suit that one of the officers had noticed when this was happening and the arrest took place. But actually, they didn't even mention the struggle and the wrestling, and then the arresting officers finding a key connected to a notebook, which directly was a key to a desk in the Watergate. And that desk was the only thing that was bugged during the entire operation. And it was a private telephone network. It wasn't even on the DNC switchboard. So it couldn't have been where we're trying to surveil political operatives in the DNC. It was, we're trying to bug this call girl operation, which is directly running a referral program out of the DNC to these apartments two blocks away. And it was like high class prostitutes too. It's very, very interesting. But so Heidi Reichen was the one, like I said, running this escort service, and she had been in the army, right? And before she became a stripper and then found out she couldn't dance. And but yeah, this is the story, dude. And she became the mob's girl from like 1960 on, and she was only like 20 years old. And then
she can't dance, but she can fuck.
And she was like super hot, apparently. That's what everybody says about her. So, yeah, but
she probably had some sort of security clearance, and also the prior military, exactly, or whatever. I don't know what her job was, but I would assume they're probably like, oh, this makes you a shoe-in for this fucking 100%. This job.
How do you spell that last name? I want to look her up.
R I K A N.
Okay.
Yeah, and she went by a number of names, like at least three names. She went by Tess in certain circumstances, and also Kathy Dieter was the main one that she would go by. and Kathy.
Pronounce Riken elsewhere, or have you just how you've been saying it? Because that sound that would look like
Riken. I've heard people pronounce it that way. It's the main reason because I've heard authors who are like really connect, spend a lot of time, actually spoke with her sister. Yeah. And I was like, okay, well,
IK, something about the K as opposed to a C does you sometimes give it the I sound, but I don't know.
Right. She's German, so I don't know.
Yeah, she kind of looks like she's like got like a Marilyn Monroe type look.
Exactly. Yeah.
And didn't she end up being off though? Just jump ahead a little bit.
Yes. Yeah. Actually, most of these girls who were involved at the level of running the op or attempted to, like, there's this one girl who she even tried to blackmail somebody on her own and get the tapes herself and blackmail. Like, I'll get into it in a moment because it is so nuts, dude. You're like the idea that
the audacity of this whore.
Yeah. How dare you, bitch? For real. But, so this chick, Heidi Riken, though, the mob allegedly put her to work once they found out she couldn't dance for shit. And they had her like getting close to NFL football players and you know politicians too, but you know VIPs, but she was working for a prominent mob boss, he was like a fixer to like this Nestline, he was pretty much the connect between, I would say, he was connecting establishment in DC to the underbelly of organized crime at this point, honestly. And so really it seems like Nestline was running an operation on behalf of the CIA, and he was utilizing his girls to do it for him. And he would enlist pimps to run certain aspects of the operation. And then he would utilize those pimps if he needed them to execute one of the girls for going too far or whatever the case was. And that did happen on more than one occasion. And yeah, it's one of the crazy
just be tripping.
Exactly. Man. But yeah. And so this girl, Heidi Riken, she didn't only run this call girl service. She would also carry money for them, like all over the country, and even like went to Switzerland to make deposits. But so other than like getting, you know, meeting with prominent NFL players to like help facilitate their interest in sports betting, which was the implication, was that, was that they were like rigging games. And it wasn't just the players. There were connections with like the Dallas Cowboys owner at the time, the owner of the Cleveland Browns. And they had direct connections to Operation 40 in the JFK hit squad, and even the club where all the boys, Ted Shackley's boys, like apparently Barry Seal might have been there that night, and his wife claims in Barry Seal and the Boys that Barry Seal was a part of Ted Shackley's unit at this time of Operation 40, and that he, and this is according to Barry Seal's wife in the book, she claims that Barry Seal was the getaway pilot out of Dallas that day. That just blew my damn mind. But that makes sense. You know, it really does. Especially when you find out he's directly connected to David Ferry, who was directly connected to Lee Harvey Oswald, you know, and they were both a part of that assassination hit team. So, and
yeah, they keep the circle small, it seems like. Yeah, 100%. It's always like a handful of Cubans.
They're all Bay of Pigs guys too. Yeah. So crazy, man.
Yeah.
But so Joe Nestline was and by the way, the FBI had a file on Heidi Riken, and they were very interested in her trips to Switzerland with Joe Nestline and Joe Nestline's wife, and they were like best friends, Joe Nestline's wife and Heidi, and it's very, very extraordinary. This story goes deep. I think much deeper than I even got a chance, you know, honestly. But so yeah, his wife, and by the way, you know, he's a notorious mob figure. He had interests in the Caribbean, you know, as well as DC. So he's not a small time mobster, you know what I mean? And And so Nestline was considered like I said, the contact between DC establishment and the CD underbelly. But one example of how the network seemed to operate, it like routinely, Spiro Agnew. Okay. I never fucking knew about this guy. And this blew my mind because I didn't know that he was forced to resign before Nixon named Gerald Ford as his replacement as the vice president. So Spiro Agnew was Nixon's first VP, and he was the former governor of Maryland. And like I said, he was forced to resign after being caught accepting bribe money that was owed him for his time as governor. And he had a girlfriend who happened to be a call girl in an operation working for Nestline, in which the girls had been tasked with recording the activities of their clients for the purpose of sexual blackmail. It's the vice president of the United States at the time.
It was time. I mean, yeah. we have the Diddy stuff lately. We have the Epstein stuff. It's like, I don't know. It's irritating. Like, my wife doesn't pay attention to shit. I was talking to her about this Diddy stuff. And mm-hmm. It just is frustrating because she's just like, who cares? Like, yeah, these rappers are doing this shit. Like, no shit. Like, of course they're going to she's just like, I don't know. It's not a big deal. She's like, yeah, okay, whatever. Cool. You're rich and famous and you had to suck a dick. Like, and like you're like, but like, do you not understand? Like, extrapolate, right. like think this through. Like, what does this mean? And mm-hmm. It's like, especially if you start adding up different rings and like, say with Epstein, it's like, what nodes are you hitting on? And like in that episode, you were talking, like at one point you were talking about the Kidman. And because a lot of people know, Nicole Kidman's dad, Anthony Kidman, mm-hmm. has like some heavy implications of like pedophilia shit. I mean, I don't know how legit that is, but it seems to be. I've never looked into it.
I'm going to now.
Yeah, but Nicole, when these things came out, started leveraging her fame to kind of push that down. And it's like people just think like, oh, celebrity, like who cares? That's just somebody on TV. And you're like, okay, but what is that? What are they able to do with that? That's influence. Mm-hmm. Like, what do you do with that influence?
Exactly.
Like that affects how people think. And it's like you prevent, like, for example, like with her dad. I don't even know what her dad did, but it's like, you mm-hmm. know, I'm assuming some was probably tied into seedy people or whatever. Probably somebody mm-hmm. of power. And it's like, okay, now because of her, she was able to somewhat subdue that being exposed to some extent.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, if you get these famous people like the Kanyes of the world, because like, if you look into Kanye's case, you can see the hallmarks of this. It's like, yeah, like this is what happened when one goes rogue. And it's like, yeah. You know, they just go fucking nuts. And it's like, I don't know. I was saying from the moment the Kanye stuff was happening, it's like, let this motherfucker cook.
Right. Dude, I know, man.
Something's happening here.
Yeah, honestly, man, I've never been more happy as far as laughing my ass off watching Kanye on InfoWars that day with the Yoohoo. I'm sorry, but when he had the Yoohoo and the pool net.
Adam mentioned like the lefty parapolitics people, but it's like those are the kind of people who get caught up like, well, he said bad stuff about Jews. And you're like, who? Like, you're missing the point. Like, oh no, he said meanie words. Like, what is he saying? Like, what is happening here? Like, what is the mm-hmm. bigger picture? Like,
exactly.
This motherfucker, like, he clearly was being controlled and like, okay, maybe you may not like how he messages. I thought it was fucking hilarious. Mm-hmm.
Well, the Pasternak connection alone, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that blew me away. But I just love getting reinforcing, you know, evidence that at least I'm not leaning toward the insane. It seems to be plausible. You know what I mean? I guess dismiss it by saying that Kanye is out of his damn mind. But
anyway. I do gotta say, I do like the way you ended that episode. For the, I'd suggest people go check it out because you did. You left it on kind of like a white pill because I know we and you have talked on our show a lot about these dark fucking these dark pedophile rings or whatever. But just the fact that we're even talking about it, like, you know, as I was saying earlier, like extrapolate,
they're forced,
like, what does that mean? The fact that, like, right now we're on YouTube. I don't know. This could get taken down off YouTube, but it's like we're talking about pedophile rings on YouTube.
So that's epic, man.
So it's like, I don't know. I might not have a huge audience, but I have an audience, and there's much larger audiences talking about this as well. So it's like the fact is happening, and I do think this probably does to some extent cripple their operations. I mean, I'm sure they're still happening, but it makes it way fucking harder. And yeah, I think we're going to get to a point to where it's just not going to be tenable for them to keep fucking our kids.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, they'll be able to get like onesies, twosies, maybe the kind of like the little cripple kids in the off in the corner and fuck. But
oh my god, but,
funny because we've been talking about these blackmail rings from the 60s where it was just like call girls, hot call girls. Right. It's like that doesn't move the needle anymore. Now it's kids. Like, what do we, where do we go once they make the kids okay? You know,
right.
What's next, animals?
Yeah.
That's what I found so crazy about this network was that, at least what Fiona Barnett was claiming as well, which, man, she is an extraordinary story, right? And so I just, it seemed to fit perfectly after, especially after where I'm coming from, the Mark Dutroux episode, and I see how established that network was, and then I'm reading about Anthony Kidman, and I'm reading about the Australian intelligence services working hand in hand with the CIA in order to achieve a global network of child sex trafficking, and it seems to always include techniques of DID and MK Ultra techniques of you know, implementing dissociative identity disorder, you know, and so through trauma-based mind control, you know, and it's like, so once again, this network, I find you have ex-intelligence officers who are claiming that the Watergate was actually a sophisticated cover-up narrative, and Nixon had to take the fall for what they actually were trying to attempt to cover up, which was this blackmail operation that was solely relying upon your sadistic sexual proclivities, right? And so the idea was that, and this guy Rothstein, who's an ex-NYPD officer, and he's been investigating these connections for a very long time, and I kind of trust a lot of what he was saying, but he claims that that network that they covered up in 1972, that network has been almost nearly exposed more than once, right? Many times. And that right as it's about to be exposed, the agency finds a way to cover up that narrative. And so immediately I think Franklin scandal, the Finders cult, Epstein, Pizzagate. You know, like my brain just, I just started freaking out. But it really is, to me, it felt like that makes sense because they're acting as if they can pander, they can send any of their VIPs anywhere in the world to pander where they could basically engage in whichever sexual proclivity they preferred. And so whether it be, hey, we'll send you to Belgium so you can engage in you know, sadistic child murder and
dungeon,
you know
what torture.
I mean? Yeah, 100%. I don't know. So it really does seem like that is the case, though, and that these networks are all over the world, right?
And yeah, program, he talks about it in Program to Kill. They're all over Europe and Italy and everywhere.
100%.
Yeah. Yeah, we talked about in prior episodes about like Gladio and stuff, and like that got me thinking, and Program to Kill got me down that line too, where you're like,
definitely.
Okay, well, like if you understand Gladio, you're like, you set up networks for like essentially domestic terrorism of some sort within areas, yeah. And you have like whole networks of it, and then from there you obviously got to do weapons, and then that mm-hmm. then kind of sprawls out to, well, obviously we got to fund these, and that's to money, and then that goes out to that expands to drugs, which, you know, is really kind of the money, actually. Like, that's where they get the off-books money. And then it really, like, it's like, you know, you even mentioned in your episodes, like, really, is it really that hard to think, like, well, we have these networks in place. And, like, I get it. Like, maybe not every one of these nodes of your network would be open to the idea of, oh, throw a kid on here. But right. Some of them would. And from there, now you have your network. Like, you already have these networks in place. You're just building them up. You're adding different dimensions to them. Is it really that hard? Yeah, and it could be
all compartmentalized, even though everybody's doing bad stuff, but you might not know everything. And it's like the octopus times 1,000. You know, it's the octopus is everything, you know.
100%. Players in key positions to fire prosecutors, or, you know, and that's really what has happened time and time again. Right. And like I said before, with the Gladio networks, like, dude, this, when the Warren Commission happened and this all went public, MK Ultra, Mockingbird, the heart attack gun. And, you know, like, I mean, when everything went public, and then you had Shackley and his boys, you had members of the real clandestine operations, the most sadistic clandestine operations that were in, you know, active at the time, and they went underground to a private intelligence network that would no longer be held to account by any sort of government, and they admitted as much, you know, and behind, you know, utilizing you know, private companies like Whack and Hunt, like I said, who just so happened to, you know, train utilize Nazi networks from the rat lines, and not only in Condor, you know, but in South America, but also in Belgium, where they're utilizing Nazi groups there to create these, you know, underground Gladio domestic terrorist operations to attempt to overthrow the government whenever they need to get a more, you know, it's the playbook, man, you know, like, it's perfectly in line. They keep running the same plays after they consolidated this network. It's really brilliant, honestly, if it wasn't so fucked up. And, but, you know.
Hey, but, you can put Phoenix in there, too.
100%, yeah. Man. Yeah.
Phoenix, Condor, yeah. I mean, which, ironically, both birds. But, you know, speaking of, like, domestic terrorism and stuff like that, I know you wanted to talk about Snodgrass. I do want to remind the audience, in probably about roughly 15 minutes or so, we're going to go into, like, the call-in portion. So if you guys want to do that, keep it in mind. You can call in. I'll put the number up in a little bit. Otherwise, we'll just kind of go through chats. But you did want to talk about Snodgrass, which is someone people have brought up to me multiple times. And this might be a spot where me and Adam can vibe a little bit more when it comes to, because it's kind of OK Bomb related. And I've been always kind of hesitant to go into Snodgrass because it's like, I feel like that's a whole other, like, deep dive. Like, I have to look into all that shit. But what he claims in, like, some of the things he claims, I'll say it does kind of lined up with what I suspect really happened at OKC bombing. So no doubt. I am kind of lean towards that. Mm-hmm. I'll give people a quick little rundown for my loose understanding of who Cody Snodgrass is. Supposedly he said he was some sort of, you know, black operator or whatever the term is you want to say, guy who kind of does essentially domestic Gladio type things. Well, not even domestic. I guess he was supposedly, from what I recall from his story, he was usually would do overseas stuff. And so that was this big hang up when they supposedly, he said they came to him for the OKC bombing. He was kind of like, no, fuck you. Like, I'm not doing this in my own country. Mm-hmm. Like, I guess that's his line. Which, I mean, yep. I don't know, like,
well, right, he, yeah, it's, yeah, I know,
fucked up line, but whatever.
It is. I know he claimed that, well, he out and out said that the CIA masterminded the OKC bombing. Mm-hmm. And he also added that it was some sort of layered operation intended to destroy 400,000 Vietnam Agent Orange medical legal liability files.
Yeah.
As well as further evidence implicating Bill and Hillary Clinton in the CIA drug trafficking operation through Arkansas at the time.
Yeah.
Which they, like I said, the timing is what I always thought was so, at least it made me want to believe it. I'll put it that way, right?
I will, because, say, you saying that, I didn't realize that was a big part of his story. Honestly, that kind of loses me a little bit. I mean, maybe he's legit. I mean, to be fair, maybe someone told him that, but as, I don't really buy that as being as, like, the reasoning for the OKC bombing is, like,
some
documents. Because I think people have too much of a myopic view when it comes to, like, the idea of, like, false flags or whatever, people do, of our government doing this to us. Like, I think it's more, I think the idea of the strategy of tension is a better way of looking at it. I think looking at it as like this, then this, like people always like to be like, well, what got passed? And there was some sort of weird domestic terrorism shit that did get passed later. So I don't know. Like, so it was, I guess there's that. I forget this.
Go ahead. It was like the precursor to the Patriot Act.
Yeah. Which, so yeah, I guess you have that. But I think even looking at that way, just the idea of moving the needle that way is kind of the better way to look at it. Because you're going to move the culture or move the mentality of your populace, your cattle, whatever, towards that way. So wherever you can get all sorts of things because now you have them in fear. It doesn't have to be a specific thing. And the idea you would do this just for, maybe that was like a side thing, like, oh, cool, that gets that too.
Right. That's kind of what I thought. I thought that potentially, I thought it was already greenlit, that this was a green light go operation. And I don't know how far, you know, ahead of time that it could have been greenlit, because I do know that, and I think I've heard you say before that I don't know how much you put stock into what Terry Nichols said about Larry Potts allegedly calling Tim McVeigh and changing the location of the bombing, and then that being the only time he ever heard Larry Potts' name drop, and McVeigh was pissed, and that maybe they were going to bomb a courthouse before this. Like, I even heard that, and like, I think that's what Terry said, but anyway, I'm not sure if it was him that said the courthouse thing or someone else, but anyway.
I think the courthouse was probably something changed. I do think the courthouse was probably was the initial target, whether
you think so?
Yeah, I mean, as I've said on my show many times, my rough idea of what I think it is like, I think that the some sort of CIA or other type of, whether you want to call it the company or whoever, some group infiltrated some FBI op, which PatCon, which was essentially, to infiltrate right wing groups, the Patriot movement, whatever you want to call it.
And incite the groups to violence.
Yeah, they were already kind of inciting them to violence. Because I think it got infiltrated by another group to literally make it do it, like they were doing it. So that's my what I suspect.
Didn't Al Gore specifically request that Strassmeyer be sent over to the U.S. and he was running similar operations at the time in Germany, if I remember, it was Germany, I think. And
he was intel over there, I believe. I don't know what options.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Military, but
in
the military, he was intel of some.
It was like perfectly in line with. It was like, hey, can you come do that over here?
Like that before or after he lived on the kibbutz?
Yeah. after. Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
Oh my god. Oh yeah. By the way, hey man, we're. What are we doing? We're bombing aid convoys, three different convoys.
What's Andreas Strassmeyer up to these days? Like,
Oh
my god,
he's doing these days. I know Ken, probably a year ago interviewed him.
Ken Silva did.
Piece. I didn't know that.
Yeah, I don't know. You can go to Headline USA and probably.
I read all. It's not in the Fed files, I don't think, but maybe.
No, it's not in the Fed files. Yeah, I think it's actually his banner. Like, I pointed it out to him. Was it Ken Lyons, I think, is his was his or something Lyons, Kirk Lyons, who was the notorious white power movement like lawyer. He was Strassmeyer's lawyer, and he put in the comments of Ken Silva's article I think it probably was like a John Doe 2 probably was like a fucking some sort of Fed or some shit.
Spook,
so, so like that's what Ken Silva's like banner is on Twitter.
That's
right now,
awesome. That's hilarious.
Yeah.
Oh man. Well, that doesn't surprise me. But
no.
What were you saying?
Oh no, go ahead.
I thought that's part of the story though of Al Gore like personally requesting that Strassmeyer come over. That. A little bit strange, especially, just being directly connected to the Clintons while they're under investigation by the Senate Select Committee. That I think is interesting though. Like, and I wish that I had corroborating evidence to say that they actually moved those files to the Murrow building. But that's the main reason I didn't put it in my episode on that, because I just couldn't really corroborate it. And it seemed like an extraordinary claim, but yeah, it was one that I did want to believe. I'll be honest. It did fit. It makes, you know, it would fit perfectly. You could see that happening is the only thing that kind of made sense to me, is like, well, if the operation was a go and they were going to bomb the courthouse, why wouldn't they? You know, like, as far as we're under investigation by the select committee and the papers were just transferred to the Murrow building, two birds with one stone type of scenario, you know, let's move the op. I don't know, you know, like, so it's possible. That's all I'm saying. And
it's possible. Sure.
Yeah. But like I said, I never put, you know, a lot of stock into it. I just always found it extraordinary.
Yeah, but I think on my point of the idea of some other group actually trying to make it like essentially a domestic Gladio type thing that infiltrated some other group, I do think let's say this was initially some sort of PatCon op and it was like a sting operation or something along those lines or whatever, and they weren't actually like maybe wanting to go live. Like, it would make sense for them to be like, oh yeah, we'll do the courthouse at night, because that was what kind of the murmurs. I don't remember specifics of who said that, but I know that kind of was what it got tossed around a lot. Is a lot of people think it was supposed to be the courthouse, like at night when nobody was there, which would make sense from like the militia standpoint. If you were like really like, I want to get back in the government, but I don't really actually want to like hurt any innocents or whatever. I just kind of want to send a statement. It's like blow up a federal building when no one is in it. Okay, like, all right, sure. Like, yeah, I mean, still probably not great, because who knows, maybe there's some janitors or something. You might still kill some people. Probably not ideal, but it's better than the Murrah building at like 9 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, there's no night childcare at the
Right. Yeah, exactly, man.
But if you do want to make this some sort of Gladio thing where it's like a lot of innocent dies, it backfires against any sort of, you know, anyone who, I don't know, wants to call himself a liberty warrior or whatever, has legitimate gripes against the ATF or whoever, so it kind of detracts from whatever political statement you're trying to make, like, that would make sense. And it also kind of ups the terror, makes it, because I mean, at the time, it was what, the largest death event or whatever in the
largest casualty event.
Mass casualty event, I think. Yeah. It was
before up until 9/11, I believe. Yeah, and except
what
for
is it?
Like,
it's like 168,
169, I think.
Yeah,
I can't remember honestly.
I know there's always that big snafu, but the leg, like, does that count or not?
Oh,
like,
God.
the rogue leg, right? I never knew about that one. I can't remember if Dr. Wendy talks about that in her book or if I heard that from Richard or Ken, but I didn't remember that one until I heard it.
Yeah.
So
I never get people get like all upset about the leg. They make a big deal about the leg. You're like, I don't know. Maybe someone's fucked up. Goddamn bodies.
Was it prosthetic or it was a real leg that they didn't find the body for?
It was a real leg, I think. Cause that was the whole thing. Cause it was like, at one point, I think they tried to say it was like a white dude, then tried to say it was like a black chick, and it was like so it's like the whole thing of like the color of the leg, like it was a whole to do.
Wow,
I don't know. That strikes me as like getting way into the weeds.
Right? Weren't there reports of vans pulling up to the Murrah building and removing boxes of files?
Yeah. Well, I don't know if it's necessarily files, but there were definitely people that were going in there and getting shit of some sort. Whether it was files, whatever.
Yeah.
There were definitely reports that they were
pulling people out, pulling out the rescue workers.
Yeah.
Well, I know.
Not the rescue workers. At the time,
that's when they were taking the cameras, I think.
Yeah. Okay.
And there was also reports of people pulling files or whatever, which I guess from a federal building with sensitive information, it wouldn't
be. It's probably
going to
happen anyway.
There's going to be people. And I know a lot of people like to make a big thing about. I mean, don't worry, I make a big thing about the surveillance cameras too, but it's like, I can steel man the argument that the feds would go in there and immediately nab it. Like, I think when I had Vassar on my show, he brought up that point that was kind of like, well, it would make sense that like you would want to get the cameras as soon as possible, like, like ASAP, because you know that's going to be forensic stuff in the future. Obviously that stuff magically disappeared, and that's where I have an issue. But and honestly, I do kind of have an issue with them taking it at the time, because it does kind of seem like you're prioritizing forensics over lives.
Exactly.
So it's like, but I can understand why the feds would do that. I may not agree with it, but I can understand it. Like, so, but now then the disappearing of those forensics is like, dude, what the fuck? So, yeah,
definitely. Yeah. But anyway, I think the only other thing that he claimed was that he was offered $1 million to carry it out as a covert operation. And he refused and became a COINTELPRO fugitive is his direct claim. But
had he been a military dude, this Snodgrass, had he been a military guy? Like,
you know, I honestly need to look into his background. I haven't looked into much of this guy other than his claims, you know, about OKC. But I was just wondering because I had never asked Jose about that. And it was always in my notes for the longest time.
I've only looked into it like extremely cursory because it's like that's a whole thing. I think he wrote like, I don't know if it was a book or like a pamphlet or like he's done a bunch of stuff, but it's like shit. Yeah, that's a whole other deep dive.
How long after the event did he make these claims?
Man, I don't know. Honestly, I can't remember. I can't remember. I found out like a couple years ago and I put it in my notes and then I remember I went back through it. And I tried to, so desperately when I was doing my OKC episode to find corroborating evidence for those files ever being at the Murrow Building. And I just can't, you know, that's at least how I came away from it. So maybe if I went back and tried to look again, I might have a little more success, but who knows? I just remember that I couldn't corroborate it. So I didn't put it in, you know, but anyway, dude, Jose, your most recent episode. Oh, and by the way, I love the one with Jim Bovard. Like,
oh, Bovard, yeah, I love Bovard.
Yeah, he's so great, man. but your most recent one about COVID, man, it was nice to listen to because I had just listened to Dave and Tom when their recent one about. I have to read Tom Wood's new book because I just love Tom. He's so great. And I'm sure it's a banger. But anyway, it was reminding me about a lot of the lunacy during that time. Right.
Yeah. And for those who don't know what he's saying, I had this is actually kind of a good bridge to kind of like moving into the ad read and then to the listener, you know, the call in portion of this. Because that's actually our sponsor now, Nintendo Shave Co. is the guy. I'll bring that up and we'll get into the... Fuck, one second. I had Andrew Nadeau on the show not too recently. He got booted out of the, I believe, the Navy or the Marines. I don't know. They're kind of the same thing for those who understand military. Don't tell the Marines that, though. They'll get upset. But yes, the Marines are technically just like a side thing off of the Navy. But yes, he got booted out because he was in the, like, I believe he had said he had like 13, 14 years in. So he probably wasn't too long for a pension. So that's kind of a big deal. But he was essentially a medical personnel in the military at that point in time. And he was very much fighting the COVID regime. We had a good hour and 40 minute talk about COVID and kind of like his experiences while he was there. And, you know, kind of made for a good conversation because for those who aren't aware, like I think it was around 2020-ish, 2021 or whatever, I got out of active duty. And so, yeah, I was dealing with a peak COVID regime in the military too, but we were coming from two different angles. I was coming as a mechanic, a knuckle dragger. So we had a very different culture. He was coming at it from as being like a medical personnel. So he had a lot of smart stuff to say about it, but yeah, it was pretty ridiculous. But I definitely suggest you guys check that out. Go to NadeauShaveCo.com, get their safety razor, guys. I've actually been using that a lot. I really do dig it. It's really economical for like for shaving. So if you're shaving regularly, you get a bunch of those. They last forever. I think I've only shaved like only swapped out like a couple razors. And you guys see, I shave my face probably about like once a month or so. But yeah, use Jose for 10% off your entire order. Yeah, it's good stuff. I really suggest. You got like soaps and stuff now too. Definitely go check that out. But yeah, check that out, that episode. It was good stuff. But yeah, guys, let's get into the, oh shit, I gotta take this off. I fucked up. But yeah, let's get into the, actually we have someone joining us right now. Cody, one of my patrons, as a patron, you're able to get the StreamYard link. What's up, man?
It's my boy.
How you doing, bud?
Hey, what's up, guys?
You fired me, dude.
What's up, dude? How you doing?
I'm glad I did. That's what I wanted to come out and say, man. Thanks for making the episode. It's awesome.
Of course, man. Thanks for bringing that up. Honestly, that that Fiona. And by the way, have you ever watched the Candy Girl? Isn't that the name of the documentary or something?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
Have you watched it?
Mm-hmm.
I haven't seen it yet. Is it pretty good? Is it worth watching?
I think it is. Yeah, it's really good. It's all on YouTube, the whole documentary. So.
All right.
I read her book too. Her book is really good.
I was reading that this week, and it was just blowing me away, man. Like her. Like I said before, her claims are just so extraordinary, you know, like, but the idea that she was personally trafficked to Nixon and Billy Graham, which I was just like, what the fuck?
Ted Turner.
Yeah. Ted Turner.
Wild.
Yeah. Yeah, man. Like, and she claimed that she was directly abused by Anthony Kidman as well, which that's just, I don't know. I mean, I didn't see any reason to doubt a lot of what I read from Fiona Barnett. That's all I'm going to say as far as that's concerned. But I was like earlier, I had mentioned the connections with that Spiro Agnew, right? The vice president for Nixon at the time.
The first one, yeah.
Oh my God, man. Like he... So like I said, he was the first VP and former governor of Maryland and got caught accepting bribes from when he was governor and was forced to resign, basically. But it turns out that he, once becoming vice president, Phil Stanford, who wrote the White House call girl, right? He says that the call girl playmate of Agnew named Pat Adams took it upon herself to get the tapes and try to blackmail Vice President Agnew on her own. That basically when he became vice president, because he was only the governor of Maryland at the time, when she was already dating him, Phil Stanford wrote like she, as soon as he became VP and was announced, she saw stars in her eyes, right? And she like saw an opportunity. And so she grabbed the blackmail tapes herself, and her goal was to blackmail him on her own. And so I guess that a former DC intelligence officer, he claims that once this got back to Nestline, the mob boss who was running this op for the CIA, that he called in Pat Adams' pimp and he told him, "Your bitch is talking too much. Do something about it." And he subsequently picked her up, took her out to the woods, and killed her.
Yeah, it makes sense.
And that was like, he testified in the Watergate hearings about that. Like, and that was Rothstein, who was, it's like, what the hell, man? You know what I'm saying? So anyway, so I mean, to me, the mob was running a sexual blackmail operation for the CIA only two blocks from the Watergate at the Columbia Plaza Apartments with a referral pipeline set up at the DNC. And we can trace it to a single desk, which was operating on a private telephone network.
Steen. Didn't McCord in a...
Steen, which mob was that?
Well, no, Rothstein was, he was actually a cop who like was investigating this, but yeah, no, I know.
I mean, the Jewish mafia is heavily tied in
100%
blackmail shit. So
no
that's
doubt.
The implication there. Is this Cody Snodgrass we're talking to? Do you have any thoughts?
Stop
you,
it,
ever,
dude.
You ever looked at Nick Snodgrass, Cody?
No,
I didn't know if you had. I figured maybe you had.
I was listening to you guys earlier, but
yeah,
no,
I don't know if you're a big
car
politics nerd. Yeah, people bring it up to me all the time, and I'm like, I'm sorry, I don't have fucking 10 hours for the side quest.
I'm gonna have to look into it now since I brought it up. Damn it!
Yeah,
but
I mean, I think he's supposedly out there. I don't. I've had people contact me and say they know him or whatever. So I'm like, I don't know, whatever. If this guy wants to somehow get to me and talk to me, I mean, whatever, I'll hear him out. I don't fucking know. I'm not saying he's a liar. I don't fucking know. He could be telling the truth. I have no idea. Oh, I'm just going off knee-jerk reactions to some of this shit, but I don't know. So,
well, yeah. Cody, by the way, there I was digging into it still today because it, like, my mind's blown, bro. Like, I'm going to have to keep looking into Watergate even after I'm done with the episode, because like I said, that. I think it's way deeper than we realize, and that it really was some legitimate attempt for the CIA to cover up this sexual blackmail op. And it looks like it was like DNC Secretary Ida Maxie Wells. It was her desk that they were running this op through. And I guess in her desk, which she locked up every night and only two people had the keys to, herself and another secretary at the DNC. I guess that Heidi Reichen, the madam who was running the sexual blackmail operation, her black book was basically in that desk, and that it had all the references of it had the numbers directly. And oh, and by the way, Heidi Reichen had a direct line to the White House, to John Dean, who was the aide to Nixon. Yeah.
She was like best friends with his wife,
personal extension in the White House. What the fuck, man? Like, that just, I just keep having my mind blown the further I read about this. And Eugenio Martinez was the Cuban that was operating from, that knew Howard Hunt from the Bay of Pigs, right? Mm-hmm. And he was the one who was tackled, and they found his the key in his jacket pocket to Maxie Wells' desk.
Oh, damn.
Right? Yeah. Crazy. And nobody reported on this, like, at the time. It's just crazy as hell to me. But anyway, go ahead, Jose.
I was going to say, Cody, we're probably going to move on to other you know, calls or the chats. Do you have any like questions or anything while we have you here? I know we just kind of shoot the shit. So,
mostly, I just wanted to call and say thanks for the episode, and I'm really happy you guys do this show so we can hear your thoughts like beyond the Underclass podcast. You know, it's nice to hear like your additional thoughts and stuff. And I agree with you on Watergate. It's really, really deep. I read the Secret Agenda book, and then you mentioned this book. I got it. I'm in the middle of it now. It's really good.
Awesome.
So, yeah, I just want to say I appreciate you guys a lot, and I'm going to keep on watching. So,
appreciate you, brother. Cool.
Yeah. Thanks, man.
Well, you might begin a series out of this, so that works out. we'll see. All right, let's get into the chat. I'm going to bring up the number real quick for you guys. 941-281-5857 if you guys want to call in. Keep in mind, we still haven't figured out the logistics on how to fucking make it so you guys can also talk to like Austin and Adam. Yeah, you can talk to me. You can ask whatever question you have, and then we'll boot you off and we'll answer your question. So anyone else pop in, otherwise we'll hop into it. But real quick, I did want to talk before I'm gonna go through the chat. I knew we were kind of started to dig into a little bit Kehoe. I'll pass this off to Adam. So he can talk a little bit. I know, you know, you didn't seem to know who Kehoe was, because I know he is. He is, as I was saying before, we like when we were kind of talking in the pre-chat. The only fucking thing I've actually really written is I wrote a piece on Kenneth Trudeau, and I've been kind of, I'm a super busy guy. I have a full-time job. I also have a home business. My wife has a full-time job. I have another fucking job, and then I have this. So, you know, me squeezing in time to write is fucking hard. But I do want to at some point write a Yeeky piece, and that one should be pretty easy when I get around to it. Cause I've already wrote like a bunch of written a few, threads and stuff that I probably could easily just kind of like, you know, just move some stuff around, you know, make it more, you know, use that as like a template for a piece, but so it should be pretty easy to write Yeeky. But after that, I think the piece I want to write most after that is Kehoe, because I really feel like Kehoe is like a key component to a lot of the OKC and other stuff. It really gets into weird, interesting stuff. I believe he has weird ties to like Oliphant, for those who are like know about OKC lore. which and gets into weird, like, you know, cults type stuff. And it seems like Kehoe may have been one of kind of his good little cult boys that I don't know if he got brainwashed or what. That motherfucker was a psycho, but that dude killed, like, what, fucking, how can I not think of his name right now? The Mueller murders. He fucking murdered a you know, kind of a dad, a wife, and, like, I think, like, an 8-year-old girl.
Yeah, the whole family.
Yeah, and they're, like, what, fucking put bags over their head and put rocks to their feet and put them in the water, essentially. Put bullets in their head, essentially. So, yeah, and it's weird because it very much was similar to the Roger Moore murder or robbery. It was the same idea where they got robbed. He got robbed of a bunch of shit. He kind of ran his mouth about, like, he essentially, I think he said it was Guthrie and maybe it was Strassmeyer that he, or somebody else. Not Guthrie. Damn it. I'm mixing up names here. Who's a pretty boy? You might know Adam. Who's a pretty boy of the group?
Of
OKC lore. Cause
you're talking, Terry Nichols or talking,
Nichols. God, I'm going to beat myself up. I can't think of his name this very fucking moment. I'm completely brain farting. I know his name. He's the pretty boy of the group. He's God, this is really fucking bugging me that I can't think of his name. But anyways, he essentially accused a few of the core characters in the OKC plot. God, this is one of the bandits guys that got busted later and got a really, really
not the sentence. Not the trans one though.
No, not the trans one. That's Langan. That's Langan. Maybe it was Langan. It was Strassmeyer's roommate. Does that ring a bell? Do you remember Adam?
At Elohim City?
Brescia.
Yeah, Brescia. That's him. That's one a lot of people thought potentially looked like John Doe too as well, huh?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how sold I am on that. I'm torn. But either way, whatever. Either way, he very much glows.
Oh, definitely. So
he was Strassmeyer's roommate. Like, that's all I gotta say. Like, really.
Carol Howe mentioned him quite often, didn't she? I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I think she mentioned him a few times. Yeah. But yeah, he was Strassmeyer's roommate. He was kind of a pretty boy. Now he's I know Booth talked about him quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
He only got, like, he didn't get much time at all for, cause he ended up getting busted for the robberies later, you know, that were, like, not associated supposedly with the OKC bombing, which, like, let's be real, they were. But yes, he got busted for that later, got very little time. He was supposed to be a felon, but apparently, I think Richard Booth and I want to say Roger Charles, when he was still alive, looked into his, like, background check and stuff like that. And apparently he doesn't show that he has any crimes on his record. So somehow that magically disappeared.
Wow.
So that's something, you know. So yes. Anyways, Kehoe, you know, essentially said that he got kind of essentially weird vibes, and after the fact of getting robbed, because he was a gun dealer as well. So a bunch of his guns went missing. So it's kind of similar to the idea of, like, as we were talking about with Gladio earlier, where, like, they move drugs around and, like, they use that for off books. It's like, okay, right. Well, how easy with, like, say with Roger Moore, where they robbed him and got a bunch of his, like, guns and precious metals and whatever. Okay, cool. Now you have off the books money. Like,
exactly.
So this is way harder to track. You've kind of got a step removed. It's the same idea where they did with Kehoe, and then he started talking about it, being kind of loud about it, and then him and his whole family fucking died, and it was Kehoe who did it. So I think Kehoe and his brother. Go ahead.
If anybody doesn't know what we're talking about or who Chevy Kehoe is, back, you know, I'm an older guy, back in, like, my high school and college years in the late 90s, early 2000s, they would always show, like, these, like, it wasn't true stories of the highway patrol, but they would have these, like, on Thursday nights, we'd always watch them because we didn't have cable in the dorms when I was in college. They'd have, like, world's dumbest criminals and, like, world's scariest police shootouts. And there's a famous shootout between Chevy Kehoe, his brother, and I think some highway patrolman, like, on the side of the road. And, I think he kills the highway patrolman. I can't remember.
Wow.
But it's a famous shootout that you probably would have seen on TV. And he fits into PatCon. He was in, you know, he's a Pacific Northwest guy, I think either Eastern Washington or Idaho. And he grew up, like, fundamentalist Christian and then kind of got in. I think his family was like identitarians, like identitarian Christian identity or whatever. Yeah, which was like the predominant, you know, white power Christianity. It all comes out of like this weird English. Israelites or something.
They claim to be the Anglicans
who thought that they were like the first tribe of Israel, and it came over to America.
For those who are interested, there's a good little portion in Aberration and a reel where she digs into it, and it's a bizarre. It's a bizarre offshoot of like, I guess Christianity.
We're the real Jews.
we was kings. He fits into Program to Kill stuff because there is a serial killer named Israel Keys, and if you get into him, he was friends with the Kehoes growing up in Washington, and he later on moved to like Alaska, and has some real Program to Kill characteristics. He was like taking buckets and like burying. Like filling them up with like knives and ropes and guns and stuff, and like bury, he'd like go to a different state and bury them, and then like a year later fly back to that area, dig it up, go kill the person, kill like random people or people that he'd been planning for that whole year. And that all stuff sounds like domestic gladio stuff, you know, just all sorts. And yeah, him and the Kehoe brothers had come up together in this weird fundamentalist Christian stuff, and just weird connections all over the place.
I think Oliphant, I forget what, I guess you could call it a cult, what was it, like a Sunshine People or something like that, I think Oliphant had. I forget the specific, and I think Kehoe was also one of those, so it's like, what is going on there? Because, I mean, obviously, me and Austin have talked a lot on our show and different series we've had about, like, cults and how we think they're kind of just like an offshoot of like MK Ultra. So it's like, what the fuck was going on there where he had this, like, essentially, it seems like, from what I recall, some sort of like almost a camp, you know, where he had like a lot of young boys and stuff. So it's like and then you look at how Kehoe acts and you're like, well, this dude's a fucking psycho. So like,
yeah, like no qualms killing people. And him and Israel Keys would go like rob people, like, because they lived out in the woods, they would go rob houses and steal guns and stuff, and there's like unsolved murders out there that they're kind of connecting to them nowadays too.
My god,
yeah, that is definitely a rabbit hole I do want to dig into at some point. I mean, I don't really know where to start, because it is like I don't know, maybe Wendy will help me out with her next book whenever the fuck she drops it. I believe she's like talked about digging more into like Roger Moore, maybe Oliphant as well. Some of the more like tertiary or secondary kind of characters. Cause I think once you start digging into like Oliphant, when you're getting to like OKC lore, you're kind of getting away from the main plot, but like, okay, I get it. But it's still like really fucking interesting. Like, what the fuck is going on over here? And how's it tie into this? And it really does. This is what I'm talking about, where it's like, once you start getting like further away from whatever, you know, major event, you start getting into like weird cult stuff and like, what the fuck is going on here? Like, that is how it is with like every conspiracy. Once you get like three layers removed, you're like into cult world. And you're like, 100%, what the fuck? Dude.
That is my exact experience, bro.
Yeah.
Have you guys watched any of the like the troubled teen industry documentaries that are on Netflix right now?
I haven't seen it yet. I've been multiple people. My sister hit me up about it too. I'm gonna have to watch it, no doubt. That Nickelodeon one, Quiet
the Nickelodeon on Nickelodeon one's good, but then there's the one about like the, you know, those like boarding schools that bad kids had to go to.
I saw that.
That's the
dude,
one.
Dude, like if you watch it through the lens that we're able to see it through. They were doing all sorts of mind control stuff there, and it's like, you know, this documentary is made by the kids who are there, who ended up like alcoholics and in bad ways and are like going back to like heal themselves and stuff, but there's kids that thrive in that and like graduate from it. And maybe think about it through the way that we look at stuff, like, is that a way to find kids to do all this weird clandestine stuff.
Oh my God. You know? Yeah. I'm like visions of Michael Aquino are in my mind. Yeah, the Presidio case.
Dude, there's yeah. Oh, go ahead, Jose.
I was going to say, I want to say, maybe I did or didn't. I want to say when I watched it, I passed that on to you, Austin, and was like, dude, this is fucking nuts. And you recall it? Yeah, I can't remember the name of it, but there was one where it was like, I know the main
program
one
is one of them.
Yeah, maybe, I think that might have been it. I mean, that was like the one that, like, probably the main chick was like that chick that, like, she did something really stupid. It was like really dumb, and that was
drinking like Mike's. She got busted with some like Mike's hard lemonade or something.
Yeah, her dad.
And she's
dad,
like a she's like a dork, like drama kid.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was gonna say. Literally, like some annoying fucking.
Yeah,
so if
super
anything, that's
annoying.
Like, that's what makes that series kind of grating.
Oh my God,
like,
dude.
Oh, God.
But yeah, in the second episode, they show like these seminars that the parents of the kids had to go to. While the kids are in there and they're at like the, you know, the Marriott conference room somewhere. And like the parents are like holding hands and like going around in circles and doing all this weird culty stuff. But then it shows them, they're like all cross dressing. The parents are cross dressing and doing weird skits. And it's super weird, man.
Yeah.
Exactly what they did in that Presidio case was, if you remember, Aquino and his wife, who were running the Temple of Set, they along with this other couple, they 100% sadistically brutalized a young girl at their own house, and that girl fingered that house and named them. And
that was odd phrasing there.
I know, I'm sorry, that was terrible. but they 100%. A part of her story was that they cross-dressed while they abused her, which I just found to be so unusual, you know. But
I mean, that would be
the whole fucking thing.
You gotta think how disorienting that'd be to get like you know, raped essentially by fucking some people who just like, especially someone that you knew beforehand, or whatever, and then now they're fucking like in drag and fucking raping you. You're like,
Jesus.
That would just be such a mind fuck. You know what I mean? Like, it'd be like, what is going on here? Like, it'd just be surreal. It's the same idea. It makes me think of like Sirhan, or just like anyone when it comes to like hypnosis type stuff. Like, if you dig into like what hypnosis is, a lot of it's just about like fucking with your reality. So it's like you do something that like would just like be like, what? It's like a God. Was have any of you guys seen that movie like Everywhere All at Once or whatever?
Yes, I love that movie though.
It's a fucking amazing movie.
So good.
But like the idea was like for them to like change into a different version of themselves in a different reality, they had to do something so outside the norm that like essentially broke reality or whatever. I forget how they explained it, but it's like, for example, one was just funny where it was like, just middle of nowhere, some dude just, you know, threw something up his asshole for no fucking reason. It was just, but it was like the idea of like you did something that was just so bizarre. And if like you look at like Sirhan, you had like the chick with the polka dot dress. And it's like when you look into like hypnosis, is a lot of it is about like just doing something that just throws you off. Like, I don't know if you guys have probably had something in your life where you're going through your day and something so bizarre just happens and just kind of throws you in almost like a borderline, like, I guess almost like a fugue state where you're just like, what? Like, you're just confused. Like, or maybe you just misinterpreted a piece of information. It just takes a while where your mind's, you know, discombobulated, and you're just like trying to figure out what is even going on, like trying to orient yourself to reality. And like when someone can do that, can just throw you off your reality like that, then it makes you more suggestible to be like, oh, this is reality. Like, I'm going to move you this way.
Exactly.
Yeah. Like, I never thought about it that way, because like, they make such a big deal out of that polka dot dress in that story. Like, maybe that had something
oh my
to do
God.
With triggering him.
I 100%
like that.
Believe that. I think that Elaine Neal was even the girl that was wearing that dress. And I think that I also read that she used to take that dress out. She had it stored in a very specific, particular place, according to her children. Her first husband was a CIA operative at the time. And her, along with another man, were spotted with Sirhan that night and also fleeing the hotel after it took place. Oh, man, it is so nuts, because it seemed like they were performing. Like, because I'm almost positive that they had him in a trance, consistently writing in his notebook. That's why that notebook reads so strangely if you ever read it. And they claim he has connections to the Rosicrucian Order and all of this from working at the racetrack, but which is true. But it does seem like, you know, he's just a patsy asset, fully, you know, mind controlled when he was in that trance. Like, they specifically, all he could remember is it's so crazy, like, because they put him into they put him under hypnosis, the prosecution and the defense. During
they
the
said
trial.
He was like highly hypnotizable. So how did they find a person who was highly suggestible?
Yeah, that, I mean, it seems like they had direct connections to the track where Sirhan worked. Mm-hmm. And so it could have very easily just have been, one, he's a Palestinian. He fits the profile.
Yeah, he was a Palestinian Christian. Yeah. He hated Israel, so pretty
exactly
there. But
yes, but the idea was that they could use it as a plausible narrative to pass off after the event, because RFK had already basically they had sent bombs to Israel, and they were there was like this notion that it was a sort of retaliation because he's Palestinian, and which to me, you know, it completely broke down as far as the chain of evidence was concerned, is in my opinion. But this girl, right, the Elaine Neal, what I think is crazy is that 25 people witnessed this woman in a polka dot dress, right? And 13 of the 25 saw her with Sirhan in the pantry moments before the shooting started. 19-year-old Vincent DePiro was a waiter at the hotel, and he said in his statement, "When I first saw him, there was a girl behind him too. He described her as shapely, between the ages of 20 to 25, and wearing a polka dot dress. An elderly couple were interviewed by Sergeant Paul Shiraga, and they told him that they were on the embassy room balcony when a young couple, early 20s, came running from the direction of the embassy room shouting, 'We shot him! We shot him!' George Green, another witness, said he saw a girl in a polka dot dress flee the scene with a man after the shooting. Sandra Serrano, she's an interesting character. She said she was basically berated by the LAPD and that they forced her to change her story. That's pretty much what she claims. And she had the most detailed eyewitness account. And in her statement, said it was a very hot night. So she had stepped out onto an external staircase around 11:30 p.m. to get some air. Around 5 minutes later, she saw one woman and two young men walking up the stairs toward her. She even noticed that one of the men, assumed to be Sirhan, needed a haircut." This is fucking crazy. Like, as far as I was, when I read this, my mind was blown. And so the other man was in a gold sweater, and the woman was wearing a white dress with black polka dots. They passed her and went into the embassy room, and Sandra quickly forgot them. Maybe 30 minutes later, the girl in the polka dot dress rushed back to the staircase, basically stepping on Sandra, who told the detectives the woman said, "We've shot him. We've shot him." Sandra responded, "Who did you shoot?" And the woman said, "We shot Senator Kennedy." And she came running down the stairs, and the boy in the gold sweater came running down after her. Sirhan had been very cooperative as far as leading up to his trial. And in 1969, he claimed to have absolutely no memory of anything that happened, like a genuine sense of amnesia, and that no one seemed to understand, right? Like, during the course leading up to his trial. And so this professor named Dr. Bernard Diamond was an expert in psychology, and he was brought in to put Sirhan into a hypnotic trance in order to have him relive the event under hypnosis.
Early life check on Dr. Bernard Diamond, please.
Right. So, May 27th, 2018, the Daily Mail published an article by Tim Tate and Brad Johnson. And this, when I read this, it really did, in my mind, confirmed that he had been seriously, you know, put under hypnosis many fucking times, man. So many fucking times. Like, he had such a tenuous grasp on reality in general at this point. It's kind of, it's terrifying, because it seems like they could do this to basically anyone. And, you know, I mean, I think there are people who are clearly more suggestible and maybe easier to program, but still, it's like, yeah, man, some of the stuff I was reading about when I was doing the James Holmes episode, I was like, okay, no one's safe. They could drive up to your house and just flip some frequency, and you've lost your grip on reality.
Yeah, I don't think intelligence is a good marker, because I think people look at intelligence as like a marker for whether you're like hypnotizable. And if anything, I think they've shown that I think some of the more intelligent people, like what conventionally intelligent, like say someone who's been to college and like say even people who've like got master's or doctorates or whatever. If anything, I would surmise that those guys may or maybe even more hypnotizable, because it's like you're more easy to submit to, I don't know, exactly. I guess authority, I guess would be the way to put it.
Yeah, I mean, look at the like the upscale liberal elite over the years 2020 to 2023. Like, what were they super into? You know, they have high IQs. And they were all. I know a guy that's in Mensa, and he's still wearing a mask. Like,
oh my god, that's so nuts, man. People still like demanding you get vaxxed to go to a concert and shit. That's what I saw Sam tweet earlier. Like, what
the fuck? What I heard the other day? If you are up to date. So I heard this, so it might have been from a screenshot or something. If you are up to date right now, you're on number 10.
Jesus. That's nuts, bro.
Yeah.
What would compel you to do that? I mean, these mind control. You know?
I mean, to be fair, I think like if I don't know if we talked about this, if me and Andrew talked about this in my episode, I know we talk about it in kind of our own chats, is that we kind of theorize that some of the earlier, you know, pokey pokes that came out may have been a little bit more vicious, if you will.
Yeah.
So it's like, I guess it would maybe track these people have 10, 12, whatever the fuck, you know, would be, you know, obviously still not probably good for you, but like, right. It's not as bad as you think. Cause he was going on about like, in the military, about how like those were the guys getting the ones like fresh, like the immediate stuff, like the right off the bat, and that he was having so many fucking medical issues. I don't know if we talked about the episode or if this is from like my chats with him, but like on the opposite end, like some of the people like that later wasn't as bad. So it's like, I mean, I don't know to what extent we can trust all right? the stuff coming out. So it's like, I mean, I could see that, you know, if you're just some, you know, dork who's like doing this over and over again, if it is, fuck, for all I know, they're placebos at this point. And it could just be like a, you know, like a confirmation bias. You're like, well, I'm fucking fine. And you're like, well, yeah, because like now you're just fucking taking sugar fucking to your veins.
I just see, like... I don't know how many, like, you know, I know too many people that are close to me that... Mm-hmm. They were consumed by it all, you know, and now it's interesting because all I see is health problems. All I see is one, they already displayed the same as far as they were already unhealthy. They were not really the most athletic people. They weren't working out every day. They weren't taking any real precautionary measures.
They were the ones that during COVID, they were like, sweet, I get to hang out and play video games.
Yeah.
Like during COVID, I was like, I'm going to fucking try my hand at gardening. I'm going to start running a bunch. I'm going to like get back in the gym more like I should have.
Right.
Like I was actually military at that time. So like I was getting paid and I was like not going to work. And like all my buddies were like, I'm just drinking beer and fucking playing video games. And like, I'm fucking running a mile or more every day and fucking working out more like I should have, you know, like, because I'm like, at that point, I didn't know what the fuck we were dealing with. So I was like, I'm going to get in shape. I mean, I was in shape already, but I was like, I'm going to get in better shape. Like, why the fuck not? I was doing stuff. That's, I think, when I started a podcast, when I did a whole, like, I was just like, I'm going to do stuff. I have time. Mm-hmm. Like everyone else was like, I'll just wait for the world to resume.
Right. And I mean, clearly there's more factors than, like I said, like, you know, dietary, you know, it just how much are you working out, how frequently? And then of course, like, I think we all are suffering. It's very basic science that we're all suffering from, you know, a vitamin D deficiency, and we, you know, we need vitamin C and zinc. There's just the most obvious things to at least have some sort of immune system that is functioning at a higher level. But in reality, it's crazy because, like I said, those same people who all fell for the product. In all that I see now is I've never seen people more sick so often. Like, it's so frequent how many times they're getting the cold, how many, and it's so, I mean, who knows? Like I said, there are many different factors that play into your immune system, but still, to me, it's just like, what the fuck? I've never seen people like, I knew them before it, and I don't recall them being sick this often. You know, like, that's all that I'm saying, but maybe I'm just hypersensitive to it and I'm focused on it now more than ever. I don't know. I try not to, and I'm the last person who, the last thing I want to do is be like, I told you so, you know, like, when it comes to this, because I fucking love these people who went and did that, you know? So it's like, but anyway, it's a frustrating thing. But I do think it has affected some people's immune system to an extent to where you better at least be working out and, you know, trying to take basic supplements to keep your immune system intact, because I don't know what you actually did to yourself. That's my only concern. And
all right, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. Let's roll through some of these chats. Did it have anything to do with the way they broke into Daniel Ellsberg of the Pentagon Papers therapist office?
Yeah, bro.
Yeah, I think obviously referring to your Watergate. Yeah. I don't know if you have any thoughts on that. That'd be more you.
Well, that was the first. That was the first op that group of plumbers went on, which was really just a few Cubans and Howard Hunt they broke into Daniel Ellsberg's psychiatrist office, and I remember Howard Hunt told Martinez specifically, he said, remember the name Ellsberg, and told him to get pictures of every single thing in there in that office that had that name on it. But then I also heard Eugenio Martinez claim that he felt that op was strange, and that after the fact, he thought maybe they were trying to run a cover op for the psychiatrist, and that perhaps he had already leaked information. And so, yeah, it was very strange to hear one of the burglars' takes on that initial break-in, but that was the first op they went on. And afterward, it was strange as well, because they felt as if it didn't really go well, and they didn't feel like they got anything worthwhile. And then they went back to the hotel, and Howard Hunt's like popping bottles of champagne, like, you did fucking great, guys. And he's like,
set up. Yeah,
exactly, man. Exactly.
Right. Nicholas Lee asked, were the burglars wearing disguises in the second break-in attempt, like mask, wigs, glasses, etc.?
They were, from what I remember, when they were, No, they didn't. It was the first time during the May break-in, they had at least a couple of the operatives had worn disguises like they just mentioned, with like Dita beards and like wigs. And but they were fronting as like delivery men in order to deliver some of their surveillance equipment to the Watergate complex before it closed for the night, so that it would already be in the building. I don't know why exactly that was a part of the op, but that was how they went forward as far as the first break-in.
And Nicholas points out again, Anthony Kidman ran the Australian equivalent of MKUltra. All right, take your word for it. Sounds about right. Sounds like something he would do. He said, you think Ye was dropping hints? It always comes back to Kubrick, too. I don't even think he was dropping hints. I think he was just straight up saying it. I don't think he's a very good communicator, at least not in that way. He's an artist. Right. Like, he's more like, he speaks in a different way, if that makes sense. So I don't think he was a, like, for example, there was that the tweet that was being shared around recently that was like kind of hype at the time, and everybody was just laughing about it. It was just kind of silly about, like, I think Diddy messaged him something about, like, hey, let me come, we'll come hang out or whatever the fuck. And he's like, fuck you, you fed.
That's so great, dude. I love what Cat Williams was saying the other day, honestly. Yeah. Like, it's just perfect. But yeah, I'm just glad to see Kanye being vindicated in certain ways. And, you know, like,
that was prescient for sure. Like, yeah. He also said it always comes back to Kubrick too. Kidman and Cruise being cast in that film wasn't a coincidence, and not just because they were married at the time. Yeah. That's actually like digging into like Kubrick. I don't remember who I remember digging into like Kubrick stuff a while back. That might've been Robert Sepper. I might've been one of his.
Did you watch Eyes Wide Shut?
I've never watched Eyes Wide Shut.
Holy shit, bro.
But
one you got to watch it.
I've watched a lot of things breaking it down, like about like how it's wild, but I've just never really cared to actually watch it. Maybe I will.
It's my favorite. It's a great Christmas movie. So
yeah, stop it.
Yeah, I know. But yeah, I mean, Kidman, and that film, like, that is kind of a tell, like, with her dad. Like, what the fuck? Why are you in here? And then Kubrick, I think, isn't that the one he died after? Isn't Kubrick also the one they think faked the moon landing or whatever?
If you want to get into it, I know Mark Clare is going through Kubrick movies one by one. Friend Sean McCann from the Wake the Dead podcast is as good as it gets on that stuff. I had him on for an Eyes Wide Shut episode on my old podcast. So check him out if you ever want to get into stuff. He knows his stuff.
It's a good film. It's just there's for sure one scene that is fucking hard to deal with, but you know, that was just me.
I mean, they're straight up doing like fucking elite, you know, weird fucking parties type stuff in that one, like on the nose.
Illuminati confirmed stuff, no doubt.
All right, Mandela's effect. Jose's room used to be blue. I think it's blue. I don't know if it's the lighting or what, but it's like a maybe it just has different lighting sometimes. It's like a grayish blue. I've not painted it since I've done this, so it is a bluish to me. I mean, I guess you could call it a gray, you could call it a blue. It depends. I don't know where you fall in the line of what's gray and what's blue. I don't know.
Fake and gray.
Yeah,
fake and gray.
1996 Anti-Terrorism and Effective Death Penalty Act. Yeah, that's right. That's what it was. I couldn't remember exactly what it was. It's also, part of that component was like essentially speeding up death penalty, which is weird that they like shoehorned that in to be like, we're going to kill this motherfucker real quick.
Yeah, just for Tim. Yeah, 100%.
And he was into it. He wanted to be killed real quick.
I know, right?
Yeah, and then
I think Dalion made that a fetish for him or something.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, and
I think he thought they weren't going to kill him. Yeah, I don't know. What do you guys think about that? I think they did. I think it would be retarded for him not to. Yeah.
I think someone probably told him like, "Yo dog, we got you."
It had to have been Dr. Jolly, right? He goes in and probably.
Yeah, just like 30 minutes, because him saying that he wanted it all expedited, cuz he fought his own father.
Cuz they gave him out of here, dog.
They gave him a stay, right? They postponed the execution because new evidence, or it came out that the prosecution didn't give the defense a bunch of stuff, and then like he didn't even want it. Like
kill me.
Yeah, he said that he didn't want the appeal or whatever that would have been granted from it.
Yep.
Yeah, I definitely think he thought he was going to live through that, definitely. But I don't think he did.
I thought the craziest part was that he made sure that his body wouldn't be released to his own father, you know, like that was pretty nuts to me.
Yeah, like, I think he was checking boxes of like, yeah, I'm gonna hook them up, make it easier for him. And it's
right?
Like, okay, dude.
This is why we picked old Tim, man. You know, that's so crazy.
Let me see what else. If we got anything else good in here. Let me see. Pretty much everyone is guilty of something. There's always a Fed involved, is from what I've learned. Hell yeah, anytime it's like anything on the news, there's a Fed somewhere. Let me see. All right, yeah. Well, all right, guys, we're already at like an hour and 40.
We'll end on that one.
Politicians are too damn horny. Yeah, that's true. They like to fuck. I mean, at the end of the day, like, I know it sounds fucking, you know, I don't know, maybe I'll piss off the trads here, but at the end of the day, like, if you really, really just boil down what everything about life comes down to, in a certain sense, you can kind of say it all comes down to fucking. It really does. And like you can make that wholesome, you can make that awful.
Right.
Like, so it's like, because for like me, I'm like, I've been married over a decade, I have two kids, like, mm-hmm. At the end of the day, like, let's be real, this all comes down to fucking. Like, that's what this is all about. It's all about the fucking. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, don't get me wrong, it's not fucking all the time, but it's like, yeah, I found someone I want to fuck, we fucked, mm-hmm. we made kids, and I mean, like, in a certain sense, and like, I think there's like a, obviously, I think for men, it's like fucking and killing. And like, I think it's like, I mean, I guess with killing, it's like destruction or creation. It's kind of like two sides of the same coin, essentially. So I think there's something to that. So it's like finding a way to utilize this energy in a positive way, or you can just go full on politician and just fuck everything and like, just let yourself get controlled by that energy and bring it to a dark path, you know, essentially. But in the day, we're men, and like, you know, as even as just biological creatures, our impetus is to procreate. So like,
that's what Rothstein said, that officer, that NYPD officer that was investigating the ring, he said up to 70%, this was his findings, up to 70% of the United States government is fully compromised. Mm-hmm. That's what he said. And it's all based on sexual blackmail.
Totally makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I believe it. I mean, you look at how these guys fall on certain issues. I mean, especially with a certain state in the Middle East we've been dealing with lately. You know, it's kind
that's
of
why,
like, well, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's why so many of them that they picked were gay. I mean, look at the Rhodes Roundtable. They were all gay dudes. Because they could be compromised. One of those guys got married and they kicked him out.
Yeah. No, that's what David Ferry tried to be a priest before he was running the Civil Air Patrol with the Harvey Oswald and Barry Seal. And he was a pedo, man. And
big time. That's why. Yeah.
Not only a pedo, you know, he was for sure gay. And I'm almost certain that he had a sexual relationship with Oswald. But, you know.
Yeah. Well, it's so crazy, all right, guys. Man. Adam, where can people find you at?
I'm up in Northwest Oregon. If anybody wants to check it out,
your specific address.
Oh yeah. I'm on Chat Roulette, Chatterbait, Minnesota. No. My wife and I live on a homestead up here. I haven't been doing podcasts anymore, but it's been really cool to get back
on
here.
Brother.
Yeah, if you want to follow my homestead, you can see we just had two new little lambs born today, and I think there's another one up on the hill giving birth right now. Our homestead's called Rising Tide Homestead. Look that up on Instagram. That's awesome. And we'll see what I got going on.
Hell, all right, man. Awesome. Where they can find you at?
Oh yeah, I'm Underclass Podcast, all audio streaming platforms basically. You can follow me on Twitter at Underclass Pod, and Instagram is at the Underclass Podcast. I have a Patreon, but you know, you can support me at Buzzsprout as well. And, you know, that's pretty much it. Appreciate you guys.
Hell yeah. You're monetized now and you start advertising that.
I'm trying.
All right. Yeah, I know it's hard. But yeah, I do want to give a quick shout out to my sponsors of the show. Make this happen. I have my buddy Toad at Tower Gang Toad. I also have Abrogate D's. I also have Kevin B. Clark, full-time guitarist, private music here in the New York area, at @ZOVERACK, then @_InfiniteSeal, then Jacob Daniel of the Biblical Anarchy podcast, @BiblicalAnarchy, then Tim Tuttle, @JollyOnKlebold, saw him in the chat tonight, @StinkySock420, he's a singer of the band Bender, which is a metalcore band. But yeah, I appreciate you guys coming. Follow me on Twitter @TowerGangJose. This is the No Way Jose podcast. Yeah, all the good stuff. Like, share, subscribe, share this around. Get this all big and stuff. And with that, we are out. Stick around, guys. We're going to talk a little bit after the stream. And with that, we are out.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.